Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Joseph Schachter. He is the founder, president of the Schachter Energy Report. Joins us on a regular basis to focus on what's going on in the energy sector. Lots of focus as well on the oil sector, as well as the oil and gas sector. Joseph, look, we've been chatting a lot recently about where oil is trading, and it's a very quick rebound from a little over a year ago, now about a year and a half ago, when oil dipped into negative territory. And look, you and I have been chatting saying it seems like the energy sector broadly, but especially oil, needs some sort of a correction here. We did get maybe a little bit of a correction so far this month when crude dropped down to about $65 a barrel. But as we're recording this, back up in the 70s, a little over $73 a barrel. Joseph, what's going on here? Why is oil still staying so elevated and hasn't really had a correction here in quite a while?
Yeah, there's two things to do. Let's talk about oil and then the oil, the energy stocks. So on the oil side, the tug of war is between the reopening trade, where people are saying, I want to own stocks that are going to benefit from a recovering economy. And of course, energy and, you know, others have had a good rebound because of it. You know, the travel related leisure stocks, airlines, all of those have done quite well. The tug of war there is between the demand side, which, you know, people are saying is recovering to 96, 97 million barrels, down from, you know, in the 80s when we had the high 80s, when we had the worst of the pandemic. And the optimists are saying we might see 98 or 99 million barrels by the end of the year. And they're calling for $80 oil. So we're, you know, 73 and a half. So it's heading in the direction the bulls want. And then they're saying full demand will get back to the 101 million barrels that we had pre-COVID in January of 2020, sometime in the second half of 2022. I don't disagree with that second point. The problem you have is we're having a lot more supply coming on. And also you have, of course, Delta and other mutations, the Brazilian and others, that are knocking off demand in South America, in some parts of Asia. You know, there's lockdowns again in Singapore, South Korea, Japan. Of course, we know from the Olympics all the COVID problems there. China's having more problems. And so you've got an issue where maybe demand is not going to be 97, 98 million at the end of the year if COVID gets larger in terms of expansion of the mutations and more caseloads of the unvaccinated in the hospitals. At the same time, you've got the OPEC deal, which is going to bring on 2 million barrels a day between August and December, 400,000 per month. You've got U.S. production growing in general, you know, in the last number of months because of the increase in the rig count and the drilling activity. And then you also have the wild card of Iran, where if there's going to be a deal done in August, which is, you know, days away, then they will be able to bring on another million and a half barrels. So I'm in the bear camp because I think that U.S. production, because of the drilling activity, will pick up and head towards 11, almost 12 million barrels sometime by the end of the year. And, you know, that was 9.7 at the low, and it was 11.2 this week. So there's still lots of upside there. And I think Iran will bring on a million and a half. Plus, you have continued OPEC cheating by a number of the players. So I think that there's going to be enough supply, and that the inventory drawdown that everybody looks at from the EIA is mainly caused because the U.S. is bringing on a lot of light oil. Because of the shale oil and the Permian, Eagle Ford, et cetera, they're exporting it because the refineries in the United States are using imported heavy crude, mainly from Canada. And so the refineries want that extra margin, and the light oil they're selling internationally, that's dragging down the commercial stocks in the States, which is what the bulls are looking at. So I'm in the camp that on the oil price side, we're looking for lower lows starting in September when the summer driving season is over. I think we will go below 70 and probably even below 60 during the fourth quarter before winter. On the other side, we are seeing a rotational correction in the stocks. The index was 145 on the S&P TSX Energy Index. It's down by 20 points or about 14-15% from the high. And you've got things like Suncor, where it was a $31 stock at the high, a month or two ago. It's now $24.82. It's down 89 cents or 3.5% today because they had disappointing results. They had more cash flow, of course, because of higher commodity prices, but they had some disappointments on the production side and on the guidance side, and that's where the market is showing the correction. So if you look at a 7-point correction, that's over 20% in a Suncor. The natural gas stocks are still the ones holding at the highest levels because you're looking at over $4 for NYMEX and $4 for AECO. So the natural gas side has picked up, and because of air conditioning demand, the natural gas players are the big winners here. The relative performance quarter to quarter will be for them. In terms of the oil guys, it probably will be not so because it's flat maybe. So unless you have production volume growth, Q3 is not going to look much better than Q2 for natural gas companies, it will.
Well, Joseph, there's definitely a lot of currents to follow in the energy markets. And as you mentioned, I think the initial excitement and what boosted oil and gas prices was the reopening trade and everybody getting out and traveling again and driving and flying and maybe even cruises starting again. And there's that summer driving season that we see as a seasonality factor. There was also the uptick in inflation, though, and that also feeds into the energy market because usually inflation and energy are tied together. Energy is a big part of what leads to inflation. So we've seen that narrative, I did wonder if you thought things may start getting a little bit of the head of themselves here. And specifically, I wanted to ask you about, at these prices, doesn't that bring a lot of that U.S. Supply back online that was shelved when we were down in the 20s and 30s, and now people, particularly the frackers, have a way to generate revenues again at these higher metal prices, bringing in more supply? Do you think that will put a crimp on some of those U.S. companies if we do see a pullback into the 60s or maybe even the 50s? Would that slow down that supply to some degree?
I think anything over 60 is going to continue the companies spending money. I was on the Trican call yesterday, and Trican was saying that all of their equipment is going to be fully utilized. So they were 40% utilization a year ago. I think they're in the mid-60s now. They're looking at 80 to 90%, which is about the effective maximum capacity for their six crews that they have, frack fleets working. And they're adding a seventh frack fleet in the next month, which is going to be focused on using more natural gas and less diesel. So they're, all the environmental ESG issues that companies are facing, it's going to be the newest technology for fracking. And it has a 3-year contract with Tourmaline. So we're going to be seeing more production coming on. Anything over 60 is very good for the cash flows of the oil-focused companies. But the majority of the activity that we're seeing where there's increasing volume is in the NGL side because they're drilling for natural gas and inventories of natural gas are low, both in Canada and the United States, and consumption is very, very high. There was a report in the Tourmaline results that came out yesterday that the California market is U.S. $5 per MMBTU, which is a glorious price and is definitely helping generate a lot of cash flow for Tourmaline and other companies in Canada and the States on the natural gas side are the ones that are going to see, as I mentioned earlier, relative performance in Q3 versus Q2, even on the same volume, simply because of the massive increase in prices just in the last 2 to 3 months.
So is that going to be your focus then, Joseph, in that sector of the energy sector, because you think that the outlook, quite frankly, is better?
Yeah, the names that we still have on our buy list are mostly natural gas names. And so we like that area. And, we've got things like Canacol, which is a Colombian name. We have Crew Energy, which is a Canadian name. And so we like that area. But we still think that if you see a correction to $60 WTI, all the sector names will come down and we'll have quite a bit of a correction. I think the TSX Energy Index, which I said was 145 at the high, 125 today, potentially could go to 100. So from 145 to 100, that's a nasty, 30% plus correction. And we're only halfway through it. So my view would be is wait for weakness. I think you'll see it in October, probably starting in September, more of a rollover, and maybe we bust 70 then once we get the end of the summer driving season. And traditionally, you'll see an inventory build in the States because they want to build inventories in the refinery side. They stop producing summer grade fuels, and then they start building inventories so that they can create, after they do the refinery turnovers, they can start producing winter grade fuels. And that gives us our inventory build, which could spook the market.
Is there a particular, and this is kind of a compound question, but is there a particular area of the market you like more? And what I mean by that, Joseph, is some people like to play the larger producer. Some people like the development stage and exploration stage companies. And then there's the oil services side, you know, marked by the big ETFs, the XLE, the XOP, and the OIH. But there's also some investors that also go after area plays, like they want a particular basin, or they want they like Canadian over U.S. or vice versa. Is there any standout area or subsector that really has your attention right now for the medium term?
Yeah, I think the natural gas side, longer term, the dynamics are more positive. Remember, we're going to have LNG Canada come on in 24, 25, so the pipeline will be built by then, and they'll be starting to move product into it, and then the LNG Canada Shell will make a decision if they're going to add additional trains, and if they do, that'll even mean more gas is going to be needed. There's also, of course, more coal-fired facilities being shut in Canada. You saw the announcement about TransAlta last week, closing down one more, converting it to natural gas. And, of course, all the ESG movement that we're seeing everywhere is putting pressure on coal-fired facilities in everywhere but China, which is still adding coal-fired facilities. I think that that's the area. And I like the northwest Alberta, northeast BC, that Montney area, North Montney, that whole area which crosses between northwest Alberta into northeast BC, I think is one of the jewels. It's probably going to be one of the lowest cost producing areas with the largest amount of volume growth in the next few years, potentially 20 to 30% increase in production. And if you have high prices, you want to be owning companies in that area. Now, the biggest guy would be Tourmaline, which is a name we've liked for a long time, and I've talked about it prior on the show. But you want some smaller names like Crewe, which is more in the 20,000 versus the 400,000 volume range BOEs per day. And I think we're going to see land plays where, let's say, smaller companies that have valuable land right in the contiguous area of some of the bigger boys, even medium-sized boys, they would probably see takeouts come. So I think it depends upon your risk profile, where you want to be in terms of the size of companies. Do you need dividend income? If you do, Tourmaline gives you some dividend. Crewe doesn't give you a dividend. I think the service stocks are pretty expensive here, and the pricing power is not there yet. That was one thing that came across in the Trican call, is that some competitors are desperate for business just to keep their revenues coming in, to keep their the banks happy and their creditors happy, so that they have cash flow to service their debt. And pricing power, which you think should go up given the significant increase in cash flow to the E&P sector, in some areas of the service sector, that's not happening. So I wouldn't be chasing the service sector here, either the drillers or the frackers any of the other, intermediaries in the service side. I think the game plan would be is anytime you see corrections in the E&P on the natural gas side, you want to be looking to be a buyer. And we're seeing corrections even on some of the natural gas stocks, which have done quite well and have been really robust in terms of investors. A name we've talked about in the past, Birchcliff was 541 at the high. It's 482 today. So you're seeing, some correction even in some of the, good natural gas names. And I think we're going to see maybe a bit more in once we get into September and we see a pullback in the price of crude oil.
All right, Joseph, thank you for the comprehensive update here in terms of the energy sector. I'm sure we'll be chatting in about another month, recapping, who knows, maybe if prices do drop or if that whole natural gas play does pan out for you as well. Joseph, as always, I appreciate your comments. I'll post a link below to your website, and that's where everyone can find out about the Schachter Energy Report, as well as that Eye on Energy, which is your free newsletter. Joseph, thank you again for your time. Have a great rest of your week and a great weekend.